Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For months, the threat of Zika has loomed over South America, and now the virus is spreading. With more than 2,500 cases on the mainland United States, more than 9,000 in Puerto Rico and other U.S. territories, a new outbreak of 56 cases in Singapore. And as the virus crosses borders, we're learning more about how it can be transmitted, about its devastating effects on the brain. This hour on Point, the fight against Zika at home and around the world. You can join us on air or online. How are you dealing with the threat of the Zika virus? Pregnant women, Floridians, what's your strategy? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining us now from Atlanta, Georgia, is Betsy McKay. She's senior writer covering global health for The Wall Street Journal. Betsy, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
And also from Atlanta, Dr. William Schaffner. He's professor in the Department of Preventive Medicine and professor in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Hi, John. Always good to be with you.
Betsy, I want to start with you and just have you describe the story that you've been covering as a reporter. Is it getting better or are we falling further behind and is the threat growing?
It's definitely not getting better. I mean, Zika continues to spread geographically, at, you know, everywhere where the mosquitoes that can spread it live. So we're still kind of sadly in an upswing. You know, scientists at the same time are learning a lot more about the virus. So we're finding out more about its effects, but there's no, aside from controlling mosquitoes, you know, spraying, getting people to wear mosquito repellent, there's no treatment and no prevention. There's no vaccine. There's no medicine. So it really is, they're up against a pretty big fight here.
Now, is this a case where, at least in most of the United States and maybe elsewhere in the world, that the change of seasons solves the problem by having cooler temperatures that get rid of mosquitoes, or because of where the virus exists and what we're learning about how it can be transmitted, is that really no protection at all?
No, seasons are a protection. So, for example, in Brazil, in the areas where, you know, this took off last year, it's winter now. that was one of the arguments about, you know, why there wasn't expected to be much transmission from the Olympics in Rio, because they're in the cooler months and mosquito levels go down. And we're seeing the inverse here and in parts of the Caribbean, like in Puerto Rico. Zika is really starting to take off because the mosquito populations have gone up. And, you know, I think we tend to think in this country, oh, the mosquitoes are here in the summer and then they'll just die off after Labor Day. Well, actually, mosquitoes are going pretty strong until October or so. So we've got a ways to go. I mean, we've had some local outbreaks here and there may be more.
Bill Schaffner, let me ask you from the other end of the telescope about the potential for a vaccine that can stop this problem. We read stories about accelerated research. How far away is that?
Well, the research has been ongoing, and it's been lickety-split. The earliest vaccine candidates are now being put into volunteers. But that said, even if everything goes very well, I'm sure it'll be a year or even more before we have a vaccine available. And as Tony Fauci has said, they've been robbing Peter to pay Paul in order to fund this vaccine program. But if we're going to move it to the next level, it's going to take a new infusion of funds. And hello, Congress, where are you?
Betsy McKay, I'm mindful of the scare that we had, a terrible scare with Ebola a couple of years ago. And there was a very large-scale mobilization by the United States government and governments elsewhere, and that problem was brought under control. Tell me how you would evaluate the U.S. government's response, the state and local government response within the United States to this problem, and that of governments elsewhere.
Well, I think Ebola, you know, Ebola was the first thing of its kind to come along in a long time, and everybody mobilized very quickly, and it, you know, was very scary. This has been different. I mean, you know, state and local governments and the federal government have mobilized and have done what they could, but they, you know, the administration did ask for about $1.8 billion from Congress, and the money is still the amount is still being debated, so authorities are using existing funds to do what they can. So it's almost the inverse in some ways of Ebola. I mean, the federal government mobilized very quickly. Congress quickly gave money, and there was a lot that they were able to do. Here we've actually got way more cases of a disease, but less of a mobilization.
Now, we've had, to Bill Schaffner's point, where is Congress? We have had the president beating the drum pretty loudly for them to act and pass this money that he's requested to fight the virus. But Republicans say there's another side to the story. We had John Thune, the senator from South Dakota, on the floor a few weeks ago saying that it was not Republicans, it was Democrats who were holding up Zika funding because of what he called their far left political allies and their concern about protecting Planned Parenthood. Let's listen to John Thune.
Democrats suggested that they were fiercely committed to fighting Zika while Republicans were dragging their feet on a public health crisis. Well, Mr. President, here's what I see today. I see Republicans ready to pass a Zika bill and send it to the president this minute. And I see Democrats who are more interested in pacifying a Democrat special interest group than they are in actually doing anything about Zika.
Bill Schaffner, does John Thune have a point?
Well, he has a point up to a point. It's not very far. As I understand it, the difficulty is that it's not a Zika bill. It's a Zika bill with an amendment related to the funding of Planned Parenthood. If we could get that amendment off, I'm not a politician, but if we could get that amendment off and just deal cleanly with the Zika issue, I think all of us in public health and infectious diseases would breathe a sigh of relief. Let's deal with it very cleanly. And it's to expand on what Betsy was saying, people in local and state public health, as well as at the CDC, have been really working overtime to prepare for Zika introductions. I'm sure they're more concerned about the potential spread of Zika than they ever were really about the spread of Ebola in the United States. And so this is a much more immediate issue.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Frank on the line from Coral Springs, Florida. Frank, welcome to the show, and go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, John. Yeah, we're out here by the Everglades, which, as you know, is a very good habitat for mosquito buildup. And we haven't seen any action really here so far on the Zika front. It's really concerning to me and my wife. We are planning to have children within the next few years here. And it's keeping us from doing normal activities like going down to Miami to our favorite breweries. And also we're worried we're not getting enough information on what pesticides they're planning on spraying or what they're trying to do. I don't think there's enough information out there for us to really, as a consumer, to really have a say on what's going on.
Frank, thanks for your call. Betsy, let me go to you. First of all, are state and local governments in Florida doing a good and appropriate job of putting out information about what people like Frank and his wife can do? And is Frank's decision not to say go to Miami to, you know, socialize and go to breweries or whatever, is that a smart and prudent thing to do?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, in terms of pesticides and what specific measures are being done, there is some information on the Florida Department of Health and the governor's website, and I'm sure certainly people feel there could be more. They have been, you know, they've been doing what they can to reduce the levels of mosquitoes in Miami, but this particular mosquito, it's an urban mosquito. It hides in places it's very difficult to get rid of. It breeds very easily in tiny pockets of water. So I think it is wise to take measures to protect yourself. I don't think it's, you know, necessarily that you don't have to go to Miami at all, but if you go, you know, wear lots of mosquito repellent. And
what about, you know, Betsy, the decision by local officials in Miami-Dade County to identify specific locales and say, stay out of them? Is that effective? Is that well targeted?
Right. I was just going to mention that. So they have identified two areas. One's in Miami Beach and one is in Wynwood. I think, you know, that's, and the way they do that is to interview people who have been infected with Zika and gotten sick and figure out where they were and then find common areas where lots of these people were and try to identify them that way. Because it's hard to find, in fact, I don't think they had found, last time I asked, had found Zika in any actual mosquito. But the problem with that is, as helpful as it is to the public, you know, there are other cases, people who've been sickened with Zika and developed symptoms who they can't tie to those areas. I mean, they've been elsewhere in Miami. The other thing is, four out of five people who are infected with Zika never develop any symptoms. So that's why the CDC said, you know, that pregnant women may want to think about just not going to Miami-Dade County right now while mosquito levels are high. So this is, you know, it's a very complex situation. I feel like for pregnant women, if they're worried, they really should take every measure they can, every step they can to protect themselves when they're outside or possibly around mosquitoes.
I couldn't agree more, although tricky issue for government officials to try to figure out what advice to give. That's Betsy McKay, senior writer covering global health and the Zika virus from the Wall Street Journal. Betsy, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the new cases of Zika virus and what scientists are learning about it. You can join the conversation. What do you think of the U.S. response to Zika? What should we be doing that we're not? In Atlanta, Dr. Bill Schaffner is with me. He's professor in the Department of Preventive Medicine at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. And joining me now from Washington is Dr. Vivek Murthy. He's Surgeon General of the United States. Dr. Murthy, thanks so much for being with us.
It's good to be with you, John.
Dr. Murthy, with all the things that we keep learning about Zika, that it can affect adult brains as well as infant and fetal brains, that it can be transmitted by people who don't have any symptoms, that it can last for a long time in the reproductive systems of men who don't know they have it. How dangerous is this epidemic?
Well, I'm very concerned about the Zika threat, John, and I'm concerned about it because we are learning more and more about Zika every day, and because we already know that the impact it can have on the fetus is quite severe. We've now seen a number of cases of pregnant women who have been affected by Zika who have had adverse birth outcomes, including pregnancy losses as well as defects like microcephaly. And our concern is that there may be more effects that we will come to understand with time, which is why prevention is so critical here. It's why we've all been spending a lot of time to make sure that people know the steps that they can take to prevent the virus in the first place.
Now, we saw with Ebola a couple of years ago tremendous fear and concern that before too terribly long was brought under control by concerted action by the United States government and other governments in the world. How confident are you that we can achieve the same result with Zika, and when do you think that might be possible?
Well, I'll tell you what I feel good about, and I'll tell you what concerns me. What I feel good about is the fact that there has been a tremendous amount of focus and time and money invested by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the rest of the Department of Health and Human Services, in conjunction with state and local departments of health all over the country to ensure that we have testing capacity and to ensure that we are working hard to control mosquitoes and to educate the community about prevention. What concerns me is that we have to provide the resources required to sustain that kind of response plan. And I'll give you an example of where this is critical in particular is around vaccine development. So we've started in August phase one trials on a candidate vaccine for Zika. But in order to continue the vaccine development effort, we will need to get funding from Congress. And unfortunately, that funding has not yet come through. My hope is that it will. Because what we need to do as a country is invest early on so that we can prevent cases and so we can address health threats like Zika in the early stages. If we don't do that, we end up having more people who acquire these illnesses and who suffer, and we incur greater costs. And that's something that we should try to avoid at all costs.
Dr. Murthy, to be clear on one thing about the money, the U.S. government, the administration, has transferred money from some purposes to Zika. In the absence of funding from Congress. Has that been sufficient to do all the things that you would have done with the extra funding? In other words, do you have enough money at this moment for the things that you think need to be done, or are there things that aren't getting done because Congress hasn't acted?
Well, we have had to reallocate funds from other sources in order to support the Zika response. You know, we've taken money from the Ebola Fund. We have recently moved money from the National Institutes of Health, from other pots within NIH to support the Zika response. This has given us some additional runway when it comes to our Zika response effort, but the funding that we have will run out at the end of the fiscal year, which is the end of September. So my concern is that is to ensure that we have a stable and reliable source of funds for the entire response effort, because the mosquitoes aren't going to disappear at the end of the fiscal year.
So the issue isn't lack of money at this moment, it's the sustainability of that flow of funds.
Well, it's a sustainability, but I would say that there's also a problem right now that we're facing, because when private companies recognize that we don't have a stable ongoing source of funding, that makes them less inclined to invest now and be partners with us on vaccine development and the development of new diagnostic kits. So I would say that while the long term, we certainly need additional funding, the lack of funding or the uncertainty about funding is also affecting our ability to build the partnerships we need right now.
Dr. Murthy, I'm going to take advantage of your presence to take a call because people want answers about Zika, and you're the one with the best answers in the U.S. government. Bonnie is on the line from Melrose, Massachusetts. Bonnie, welcome to the show, and what's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have currently an 11-month-old daughter, and we have a trip scheduled to south of the Tampa area in September. Since I won't be worried about getting pregnant, I'm worried about what the effects will be on the 11 or 12-month-old's brain now in the future if she is to be bitten. Would it be better just, you know, maybe not to go this year? Or, you know, should I just be extremely cautious?
Thanks so much, Bonnie. Dr. Murthy, what would you tell Bonnie?
Well, Bonnie, thank you for your question. And, I think the question you're raising is one that a number of other people have. And what I would say is the following. Number one is we have not seen adverse effects of Zika in children of your child's age or the 11-month range. But the caveat I want to give you is that we don't have a whole lot of experience with Zika. This is a virus that just came to the Americas in 2015, and we are learning more about it as time goes on. So while we haven't seen any adverse effects in infants, for example, I think it is important to be cautious, and if you do travel down to Tampa, to take whatever steps possible to prevent your child from being bitten by mosquitoes, and this includes wearing mosquito repellent, staying in air-conditioned spaces, wearing long sleeves and long pants whenever possible, and trying to stay away from areas where there's a lot of stagnant water, because these mosquitoes can breed in areas as small as a bottle cap full of water. I also just want to say more broadly that in addition to thinking about your infant child, what we want everyone to think about is the fact that, number one, if they're pregnant, they should not travel to areas where Zika is spreading. This includes a number of countries in Latin America and the Caribbean, includes Puerto Rico, and two areas that have been now identified in Wynwood and South Beach in Miami-Dade County. And if you are a man or a woman whose partner is pregnant, and if you travel to an area with Zika, you should avoid having unprotected sex for the duration of the pregnancy because of the risk of transmitting Zika through sex.
Let's go to another call. We've got Jonathan on the line from Wakefield, New Hampshire. Jonathan, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John. Thank you.
Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, my question is, what is it in particular about the Zika virus that makes it stand out in importance above some of the other epidemics that we're having in our country right now, like such as Lyme's disease, which is a serious problem up here in the Northeast and has much more significant health implications than the Zika virus, from my understanding. I'm wondering why Zika is getting the media coverage and the national reaction and the political action that's being taken, and diseases such as Lyme's disease are not.
Jonathan, thanks for the call. Dr. Murthy?
Well, Jonathan, thanks for your question. You're absolutely right that there are many other conditions that we are concerned about. You know, Lyme disease is one of them, heart disease, diabetes. These are all conditions which affect many people in America. But the reason that we're focused on Zika as well, it's not because we're losing focus on the other illnesses that matter. It's because we have seen Zika now spread rapidly in the Americas. In fact, in the continental United States alone, we have over 2,500 cases of Zika. When we look at our U.S. territories, we have over 9,000 cases of Zika, many of them locally acquired in the territories, particularly in Puerto Rico. So we're responding to this, one, because of the significant increase in cases, and also because of what we're seeing is a growing set of conditions that are caused by Zika, including microcephaly, and also including a syndrome called Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a disorder of the neurologic system which leads to paralysis and weakness in adults. So we want to get on top of this before we see what happened in Brazil, which was an explosion in the number of cases of microcephaly. And when you have a child who has microcephaly, that is not only has a serious impact on their individual health and on their families, it also has a cost for the healthcare system. Caring for a child with microcephaly can cost up to $10 million over the course of the lifetime. But the most important reason we're acting is for the humanitarian reason, because we see an illness that has adverse consequences, and we need to do everything we can to prevent it.
Dr. Murthy, we got a question from one of our listeners on our website. It was Neil Blanchard, and he asked, are there other causes of microcephaly, which has existed for a long time, or has it always been Zika and we just didn't know that?
Well, it's a good question. We have certainly seen microcephaly before Zika was present here. And so, yes, Zika, microcephaly can occur in the absence of the Zika virus. But what we saw in Brazil and what we've seen in other parts of the world is that when Zika has set in, we've seen now with the benefit of retrospect a significant spike in the number of cases of microcephaly. And look, this is an important issue, and a child who is born with microcephaly, this is a serious condition, and you know it can be devastating for a mother and a father and for a family. And you know, to me, I think of this in very personal terms because my wife is pregnant, and we've had to think about where we travel and about what precautions we take as well. But I want to emphasize that the responsibility for preventing Zika is not just that of pregnant women, even though we're most concerned about them getting Zika. The responsibility for protecting pregnant women lies with all of us, and that's why we're working hard to make sure that everyone knows that they should take the steps necessary to prevent mosquito bites and to also have safe sex if they travel to an area with Zika.
Dr. Vivek Murthy is the United States Surgeon General. Dr. Murthy, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, John.
And joining me now from London is Dr. David Heyman. He's professor of infectious disease epidemiology at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. He's chair of the Emergency Committee on the Zika virus at the World Health Organization and head of the Center on Global Health Security at Chatham House in London. Dr. Heyman, welcome.
Hi, John. Thanks very much.
Let me start with a broad question for you. Betsy McKay of the Wall Street Journal was on earlier in the hour, and she said this problem right now is getting worse rather than getting better. Do you agree?
Absolutely. It's certainly in the world. As you look at the world on the whole, Zika is increasing in the number of outbreaks in many countries around the world.
And what are the prospects that concerted action by governments can stop that? Or do you see this as something that by its nature and by the way in which the symptoms can be hidden or not displayed and that the virus can incubate and stay alive for a long time in the systems of people and be transmitted later? Is this something that we're going to be dealing with for a very long time at a very high level?
Well, John, it's very difficult for the world to stop this disease from spreading. It's begun to spread. It began back in the late or the early 2000s, and it continues to spread today, and it will continue to spread to other countries. What the world can do together, though, and what WHO, the World Health Organization, has been promoting is working together on research, working together to develop that vaccine. And as you probably know, there are over 30 different groups working on development of vaccines and also in developing tests to diagnose the disease and really pooling information to better understand what's going on and where this virus really is having a major effect on the human body.
I want to play a little sound from someone in the United States, in Miami, who is very fearful. She became infected with the Zika virus in Venezuela, gave birth in Miami. Her daughter, 7 weeks old, has some signs of Zika-related complications, scarring on her retina, calcification on her brain. Here's what she told CNN.
Lloré muchísimo.
I cried a lot. One always thinks the worst is going to happen because you don't know what part of the brain was damaged. Doctors wouldn't say a lot because they were doing a bunch of tests. It was horrible. It still is. The fear is there.
Dr. Heyman, what would you say to all those fearful young parents or would-be parents out there?
Well, certainly this is an issue for couples of reproductive age. And the only way to prevent the infection at present is to prevent mosquito bites. And that includes insecticides, it includes repellents, it includes long sleeves, staying in air-conditioned spaces, all those things that have been talked about earlier. But if you look back in history, rubella, or German measles, was a virus which caused even more detrimental effects than does Zika. In women who were infected during pregnancy with German measles, it was fairly certain that their child would have some of these defects that people are seeing in Zika. And a vaccine came along, and now we're protected from that. So what needs to be done is at present, people need to be taking personal precautions and take it as their own responsibility. Governments need to be doing what they can with vector control, and the international organizations such as the World Health Organization need to be making sure that the research that's necessary is advanced so that there is a vaccine in the shortest possible time.
Dr. Schaffner, Dr. Heyman just referred to scientific advances that may lead to the development of a vaccine. What would you say is the state of our knowledge about the Zika virus? Is this something that has become an object of research and concern relatively recently, and we're just at the dawning of understanding, or is it more advanced than that?
Well, our knowledge about the Zika virus is expanding exponentially, John. It is a relatively new virus that has burst upon the scene, and there are now literally laboratories whose lights are on at night with investigators working on the sorts of things that Dr. Murthy and Dr. Heyman have talked about. Vaccine development, better diagnostic tools, treatments, ways to interdict mosquitoes so that the mosquito populations can be reduced, and new treatments. So all of those things are working simultaneously. But as Dr. Heyman said, there are things we can do ourselves right now to protect ourselves. One is to be mindful to avoid mosquito bites. Use those repellents all the time. As we used to say in Boy Scout camp, go around your home and police the area, namely look for standing water and get rid of it because that's where the mosquitoes can breed. Avoid going to Zika-infected areas unless there's an absolute need to do so. And when you do, stay inside as much as possible.
And Dr. Schaffner and Dr. Heyman, hold that thought. We'll be right back. We're discussing the threat of the Zika virus and what the global response should be. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the global response to the Zika virus and what more needs to be done. You can join the conversation. With MERS, Ebola, and now Zika, are these summer epidemics a new normal? From London, Dr. David Heyman's with me. He's the chair of the Emergency Committee on the Zika virus at the World Health Organization and professor of infectious disease epidemiology at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And from Atlanta, we're joined by Dr. William Schaffner, professor in the Department of Infectious Diseases and Preventive Medicine at Vanderbilt University's School of Medicine. I want to just remind listeners of the stakes in this crisis by playing a bit of sound from a pregnant reporter who is covering the Zika story in Miami. She spoke to NPR earlier in August and talked about a pregnant woman she interviewed who cried in her car after getting a mosquito bite.
We are in South Florida. Mosquitoes are a fact of life. They are not the sort of thing that would have made this woman cry a month ago, but they have taken on such a sort of terrifying presence. And all of the unknowns around what can happen with the Zika virus are really haunting a lot of pregnant women that I talk to.
Dr. Schaffner, that's a haunting thing to hear for people in significant part of the southern United States.
It certainly is. It goes to our hearts, and it points out how important it is that we continue to do everything we can to control Zika, to educate people about what they can do to protect themselves, and to work on vaccines so we can prevent that kind of heartache, not only of mothers here in the United States, but of mothers around the world in countries that might be affected by Zika.
Let's go back to the phones. Ben is on the line from West Palm Beach, Florida, of course, one of the affected areas that we're talking about. Ben, welcome to On Point. What's your question?
Thank you. Yes, during the Ebola crisis, we heard a great deal about the use of contact tracing to prevent the spread of Ebola between people, but we have not heard anything about trying to prevent people who have symptoms of Zika virus in the United States, which you've identified as about 2,500 people, from being bitten by mosquitoes. If mosquitoes don't have infected people to bite, then the mosquitoes who bite other people won't be infected themselves. It would seem to me to be easier to prevent 2,500 people from being bitten by mosquitoes than trying to prevent millions and millions of Americans from being bitten by billions of mosquitoes.
Ben, that's a fascinating question. Dr. Heyman, what would you say?
Yeah, Ben, it is a good question. And, you know, the two diseases are very different. Ebola is passed from person to person, and every case, or almost every case, is symptomatic. So you know when a person is infected, and you can then trace contacts and watch those contacts to see whether or not they develop a fever. If they develop a fever, then they can be isolated and managed properly. In Zika, as you know, there are 80% of persons who are asymptomatic when they're infected. So if you were doing a contact tracing activity, you would have to be doing a contact tracing activity of a person who was Zika infected to other people around that person who had been in contact, and you might not know whether or not they became sick. You could know by doing an antibody test whether they had the antibody, but you could do nothing with the mosquitoes. The mosquitoes would be there, And it's not really feasible to take 2,500 people and isolate them in such a manner that mosquitoes can't get to them. So it's a real predicament, and it's a very different situation from contact tracing in a disease that's passed from person to person.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Gladys is on the line from Miami, Florida. Again, we're seeing lots of concern from people who live in the most impacted areas. Gladys, welcome to the show, and what's your question?
Thank you. Hi, John. My question is this. These blood mobiles that are around all over the place requesting blood, are they testing for Zika? And if so, wouldn't this be a good way to kill two birds with one stone, getting a free Zika test and at the same time donating blood?
Dr. Schaffner?
Well, Gladys will be reassured because the blood supply in the United States, it's now been decided, will be tested for Zika. You know, we test all donated blood for a whole array of infections. This is one other test that's now been added. We have the diagnostic capacity to do that, and so we're going to make sure that we do not have transfusion-related Zika.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got another call from Juanita. She's in Springfield, Illinois. Juanita, welcome to the show.
Hi, John.
Go right ahead.
Yes. My daughter is traveling to Mexico soon. They just got married, and she wants to get pregnant. My question is, how long should they wait to try to get pregnant after they return to Springfield?
Dr. Heyman, how would you advise Juanita?
Well, there are several things that could be done. When they come back to Springfield, they could certainly go to their medical doctor and ask for a test to see whether or not they had been infected. And if they come back and don't want to do that, then I think the recommendations depend on which country, but I think in the U.S., and Bill Schaffner will correct me if I'm wrong, I think they're about 6 months or during the 6 months after returning that you should be careful with your sexual relationships.
Yes, David is exactly correct that the gentleman should use protected sex if he has not been ill for 8 weeks. If he has had Zika infection or an illness like Zika for actually 6 months, because this virus can persist in the reproductive system and be in the semen for apparently many months.
Want to take another call? We've got Stephen on the line from Madison, Tennessee. Stephen, welcome to On Point. What's your question?
Thanks, and hi, John, and hi to your guests. My question is, can the Zika virus survive in the blood of other mammals or birds like West Nile or dengue? Because that would seem like it would complicate matters to contain it. For example, if a mosquito bit an infected dog and then bit an uninfected person. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Stephen. Dr. Heyman?
Well, you know, as was said earlier, we're very early in understanding what's going on with this disease. What we do know is that Zika originally was identified in monkeys in Uganda. This was back in the 1940s. And then there were really no outbreaks in humans until one occurred in Nigeria several years later. So we know that the virus is carried by monkeys and it can infect humans, probably by the same mosquito that bites an infected monkey or some other reservoir. But what's not known now is what the infected mosquitoes in North America or in Singapore or elsewhere are doing as far as infecting animals that they might bite. And that's some of the work that needs to be done. In fact, for these new diseases which crop up, such as this Zika virus, this current Zika virus, what's known is fortunate, but what's unknown is what's really the concern, because it's not known the full potential of this virus yet.
Let's take another call. Sarah is on the line from Pembroke Pines, Florida. Sarah, welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you. I am 13 weeks pregnant. I live in Pembroke Pines. And I just called my local mosquito control to ask for someone to come out to spray. And they took my name and my address, and I asked them what the response time was, and they told me about 2 weeks, but they couldn't be sure. So I said, I am pregnant. Is there any way that this could be expedited? It doesn't matter since I am pregnant. And the lady's response to me was, no, it doesn't really matter, and we can't change the response time. So that's very concerning to me as being a resident, being a pregnant woman in Pembroke Pines. And what are they doing, the community, to make us a priority for spraying?
Sarah, I certainly understand the concern. Thanks for your call. Dr. Schaffner, you don't answer for local county mosquito boards in Florida, but what is your assessment of the priority that should be assigned to someone like the caller?
Well, Sarah's concern is very evident and very real. What's true is that mosquito control in the United States is very much a local phenomenon, and the resources and the expertise vary substantially from community to community. Some of that could have been enhanced if we had some money from the Congress a little bit earlier. But nonetheless, Sarah should know that mosquito control is, first of all, not a one-and-done deal. It's something that has to be done in a sustained fashion, and she can actually help a great deal. This is a mosquito that's what we call peri-domestic. It lives around dwellings. And if she would go around her house and make sure that there's no standing water, that will reduce the risk greatly. And then, please, Sarah, use insect repellent. As I like to say, the fragrance of this season is DEET. So use that.
Now, I want to turn to another issue, which is the recent confirmation of several dozen cases in Singapore, largely from foreign workers there. An 18-year-old woman spoke with Reuters yesterday about those dozens of cases of Zika that have been confirmed.
I think it's pretty worrying because it just suddenly popped out of nowhere. We suddenly have 41 cases just out of the blue. So I think it's pretty alarming. And I think steps should be taken to actually find out how or why the sudden spread of the Zika virus occurred.
Dr. Heyman, what does the confirmation of cases in Singapore tell you?
Well, what it tells me is several things. The first thing is that it tells that borders cannot stop infectious diseases, and we all know that. These borders are there, but people cross those borders many times asymptomatically infected without symptoms, or in the early stages of disease. So people take disease around the world, and then the local vectors, in this case the mosquito, picks it up. The second lesson in Singapore is that Singapore is one of the most technologically advanced countries in the world, and they have had a very elaborate and very costly vector control program, mosquito control program, for the past several years, because they also have dengue and chikungunya in Singapore. That program has been very expensive, as I said earlier, and also very difficult to manage. And even that program does not ensure that there will not be transmission of Zika when it comes in, as has been shown. So what's important, again, and Bill Schaffner said this earlier, is we need to own this disease ourselves. We need to protect ourselves, and we need to understand how to do that. And we need to hope that our governments will begin to do the vector control and other activities which will decrease but not stop the risk. And we also need to make sure that the international community is working together on development of these very important vaccines.
Let's go back to the phones. Kate is on the line from North Palm Beach, Florida. Kate, welcome to On Point. What's your question?
Hi. I've been asked to go to Haiti as support with a medical team for a week in late October. I have a new grandson due on September 11th. Is it wise for me to go? Is there any danger?
Dr. Schaffner, how would you advise Kate?
Well, Kate, if you go, and this is a humanitarian activity, and so congratulations, take good care to avoid mosquito bites as much as possible. Once again, mosquito repellent is absolutely at the core of that. I recognize that if you're in Haiti, you can't always be indoors, but spend as much time indoors as possible in a screened and possibly air-conditioned environment. And I know it's going to be warmish, but long sleeves, long trousers are the sorts of things, particularly with light-colored clothing, that help you avoid mosquito bites. You will not put your grandson at risk.
Back to the phones. We've got Carol on the line from Stratford, Vermont. Carol, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. I'm confused about if a regular mosquito bites someone that has Zika,
can that mosquito then carry it? Like, I live in Vermont. I know it's not here, but if someone comes and a regular Vermont mosquito bites a person that's infected, will it and can it then carry it to someone else?
Dr. Heyman, what would you tell Carol?
Yes, a mosquito is infected by biting a person who's infected with the virus. That mosquito takes blood from that person, and then that blood is digested, and the virus remains alive and is passed on to others. There can be very elaborate cycles of the virus, of different types of virus, for example, the yellow fever virus, in mosquitoes so that they can be, the virus can be transmitted from a female to her offspring. But it's not yet clear, it's not yet fully understood the potential of the Zika virus to become a permanent resident in some mosquitoes. But what is clear is that mosquitoes pick up the virus from one person and transmit it to another.
Dr. Heyman, how would you evaluate the performance of public health officials in the United States and elsewhere in the world in response to this crisis?
Well, you know, I think that there's been a great rallying. In fact, in the Americas, through the Pan American Health Organization, of which the U.S. is a member, there was great effort already back at the end of last year in order to understand what was going on and to begin collecting data. So that when, in February of this year, the World Health Organization in Geneva called an emergency committee, there was already a tremendous amount of information which helped understand what was going on and what needed to be done. The U.S., like other countries in the Americas, have been very open with the information that they have provided to the emergency committee and have provided the information that has permitted global recommendations, such as those that were made at the time of the Olympics in Brazil and that continue to be made by the World Health Organization.
Dr. Schaffner, quick answer. How would you grade public health authorities in the United States?
Oh, 4+. There's no doubt that there's been collaboration between the feds, the CDC, and working through the state and local health departments. Zika has been seen as a potential threat from the beginning. So health departments have reallocated resources, trained their personnel, sent information out to clinicians so that doctors and nurses can make early diagnoses. And if cases are reported, you immediately get an investigative response. So I'm giving my public health colleagues very high marks about this.
That's good to hear. Dr. David Heyman of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, thanks so much for joining us. And Dr. William Schaffner at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine, thank you.
My pleasure, John.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, science at a tipping point. How can science be saved? I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.